श्री गौर भक्तवृंद की जय।
श्याम गौर भक्तवृंद की जय।
प्रेमानंद
ओ ग्लोरी इज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी इज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी इज टू द लोटस फीट ऑफ श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग।
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading this morning in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's Monday morning, Dwadasi. What time do we break? Dwadasi. Okay, we got plenty of time. Okay, so this is Srimad Bhagavatam this morning. We're in the fifth canto, first chapter. Today is text number 11. This is the activities of Maharaj Priyavrata. You put 10 on the board. Did I say 11?
Yeah.
I meant 10. I was looking at the top of the page. It said 11. See, it's 10. This is a prose text. It's not in verse. So I'm going to just break it up. Yeah, they'll see it when I do this. Okay, so first we'll do the word. Bhagavan
Bhakti
Bharata
Tat
Upanita
Arhanaha
Sukta
Vakkena
Patitaram
Udita
Guna Guna
Avatara
Sujayaha
Priyavratam
Adi Purushaha
Tam
Sadaya
Hasa
Avalokaha
Iti
Ha
Uvacha.
Bhagavan Apti Bharata Tadupani Tarhanaha Sukta Vakkena Titaram Udita Guna Gunavatar Sujayaha Priyavratam Adi Purushas
Tam
Sudaya Hasa Valoka Iti Hovacha Bhagavanapi Bharata Tadupani Tarhanaha Sukta Vakkena Titaram Udita Guna Gunavatara Sujayaha Priyavratam Adi Purushas Tam Sadaya Hasa Valoka Iti Huvacha. Bhagavan Bhakti Bharata Tarupani Tarana Sukta Vakkena Titaram Udita Guna Gunavatara Sujaya Priyavratam Adi Purushas
tam sudaya hasa valoka iti uvacha bhagavan nabhi varata tadvani yatharanaha sukta vakke nati taram Vrita guna guna avatara sujaya Sriyatam hari purushasam Tam sudaya asavaloka Iti uvacha Bhagavannabhi varata Parnitahana
Sukta Bhaktena Titaram
Sukta Bhaktena Titaram
Udita Guna Guna Avatara
Udita Guna Guna Avatara
Sujaya Priyavritam
Sujaya Priyavritam
Hari Purushastvam
Hari Purushastvam
Tamaya Sabhavoka
Sudaya Hasavaloka
Iti
Ovacha Any other takers on this one? Bhagavan, Lord Brahma. Sometimes any great person is called Bhagavan. Lord Brahma. Api, moreover, Bharata, O King Parikshit, Tat, by them, Upanita,
brought forward.
Arhanaha, worshipable paraphernalia. Sukta, it's sukta, right? Sukta means a kind of soup. No, it doesn't. It means according to Vedic etiquette. Vakena, by language. Atitaram, highly. Udita, praised. Guna guna, qualities. Avatara, because of the descent. Sujayaha, whose glories. Priyavratam, unto Priyavrata. Adipurushaha, the original person. Tam, unto him, sadaya, with compassion, hasa, smiling, avalokaha, who's looking, iti, thus, ha, certainly, uvacha, said. Translation, my dear King Parikshit, because Lord Brahma had finally descended from Satyaloka to Bhuloka, Narad Muni, Prince Priyavrata, and Swayam Rupa Manu came forward to offer him objects of worship and to praise him in highly qualified language according to Vedic etiquette. At that time, Lord Brahma, the original person of this universe, felt compassion for Priyavrata and, looking upon him with a smiling face, spoke to him as follows. Srila Prabhupada's purport. That Lord Brahma descended from Satyaloka to see Priyavrata indicates that the matter was very serious. Narad Muni had come to advise Priyavrata about the value of spiritual life, knowledge, renunciation, and bhakti. And Lord Brahma knew that Narada's instructions were very impressive. Therefore, unless Lord Brahma personally went to Gandharmadana Hill to request Priyavrata, Lord Brahma knew that Prince Priyavrata would not accept his father's order. Brahma's purpose was to break Priyavrata's determination. There's a nasty business here. And therefore, Brahma first looked upon Priyavrata with compassion. His smile and compassionate features also indicated that although Brahma would request Priyavrata to accept household life, Priyavrata would not be out of touch with devotional service. By the blessings of a Vaishnava, everything is possible. This is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as Kripa Siddhi, or perfection attained simply by the blessings of a superior person. One usually becomes liberated and perfect by executing the regulative principles set down in the Shastras. Nevertheless, many persons have achieved perfection simply by the blessings of a spiritual master or superior. Priyavrata was the grandson of Lord Brahma, and as a joking competition, and as joking competition sometimes takes place between grandson and grandfather, in this case also, Priyavrata was determined to remain in meditation, whereas Brahma was determined that he rule the universe. Thus, Lord Brahma's affectionate smile and glance meant, my dear Priyavrata, you have decided not to accept household life, but I have decided to convince you that you must accept it. Actually, Brahma had come to praise Priyavrata for his high standard of renunciation, austerity, penance, and devotion, so that he would not be deviated from devotional service even though he would accept household life. In this verse, one important word is sukta vakena by Vedic hymns. In the Vedas, there's the following prayer to Lord Brahma. Hiranya Garbaha Asama Varatagare Vartatagare Bhutasya Jataha Vatir Eka Asit. Brahma was received with the appropriate Vedic hymns, and because he was welcomed according to the Vedic etiquette, he was very pleased. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Ramani Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivishesha Sunyavari Paschacha De Satarani Oman Gyanam Timaran Dasya Gananjana Shlaka Chatsur Unmilitam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanshakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Chapatitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So the story here is that I think Priyavrata was, if you have to remind me, Priyavrata was the oldest son of Swayambhuva Manu, and naturally he would have taken over the administration of the universe, but he wanted to be renounced. He was especially influenced by the teachings of Narada Muni, whose one of his business seems to go around to people who are destined for household or life, and like the Haryashvas and others, and
take them into renounced life and those making their fathers angry and so on. So Priyavrata did that. He did not. And so then the next son, who's Uttanapada, right?
Yes. Yeah?
He becomes the next in line. And then, of course, Uttanapada has Dhruva and so on. But now, somehow or other, there was nobody else, right?
No.
What happened? Oh, so he didn't have children. So then after Dhruva ascended along with his wife, actually. Along with his mother. That's right, his mother went with him. Then there was nobody. So then they said, okay, we have to get Priyavrata here. So Priyavrata renounced the world. He was in retirement. And now it was going to be necessary to convince him to take over this post. Just like, you know, there's a popular plot where a big government person, usually law enforcement person, after doing great deeds, he gets disgusted with the whole thing and he retires. He goes down to some Caribbean island, and then a big problem comes up and they need to bring him out of retirement. And there's always this scene where these guys go and try to convince him to strap on the guns again. And he doesn't want to have any more to do with it, you know. So it's a very old... Here we see the origin of the story. Here's Priyavrata now has got to... The necessity is there of bringing him away from his renunciation and have him become the king, the emperor, really. And to do this means you have to accept household life. There's no incident of anyone actually being in a royal position except for Bhimasena, but then he was out of when Bhima took he was actually out of the picture too in a way, huh? He took a vow of celibacy. That meant he couldn't actually be on the throne because one thing is to have children is necessity is there. So there has to be wife or wives and management, and the whole business is tough. Tough to maintain Krishna consciousness under those circumstances. So Swayambhuva came, his father came to talk to him. But Narada was also present, so there might be a debate with Swayambhuva saying one thing and Narada saying something else. So then to weigh in on this matter, Brahma descends. This is the word avatar. It means he comes down, that is from his place in Satyaloka to Bhuloka, where in this Gandhamadana hill, which is one of the Varshas and on Jambudvip. The Varshas and Jambudvip, many of them are, what do you call them, terrestrial paradise. There's three kinds of Swargas. There's Swarga where the demigods, Indra lives, right? And then there's also the Swarga, which means where the demons live, the Bilaswarga, the paradise that's subterranean paradise. And then there's Bhomaswarga, heaven on earth, or the terrestrial paradise. You know, I mean, even as late as 15th century, explorers were looking for this terrestrial paradise because of stories like this that somewhere there was these heaven on earth. That's what when they went to America, you know, De Soto, he found Florida. Which at that time wasn't developed like it is now. It was a dismal swamp. Looking for, remember the fountain of youth? And though they found it, when they found this country, somewhere there would be this place, because it was on another part of earth. You know. They were looking for this. But actually, from Bhargavarsha, you can't really go there. Rather, the standard of life, they're like demigods, and the demigods also come down there to it's a vacation spot for them. These things. So that's where he is, Gandhamadava Hill. But he's performing, he's not in enjoying mood, he's got a nice place for performing his austerity. So Brahma comes down. And here Brahma is addressed, you know, Bhagavan and Adipurushaha. These terms are being applied to him. Because on the one hand, he's also a Shaktyavesha avatar. So for Shaktyavesha avatar means you may not be Vishnu Tattva or in the category of God, maybe Jiva Tattva, not always, but you have got a very specific mission for which you are empowered, and within that mission parameters, the boundaries of that mission, you can act as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Brahma was empowered as the creator. And part of his job as the creator is to propagate things. That's his. Because the Lord appears in three phases as different kinds of avatars. For the creation, maintenance, and the dissolution of the universe. There's a nice verse like that, actually. I think I have it here. I love this verse. It's in the second canto. Where it mentions this kind of... scheduled incarnations with specific functions. I'll find it here. It's really... here it is. Sarga means sarga, at the sarga. Sarga is creation. See, there's three words here, sarga, and then stane in the middle, or in the period of maintenance, and then ante means at the anta, at the end. Brahma speaking this verse, to sarge tapoham rishayo navaye prajeshaha. In the beginning, at the creation, I am there, aham, and the sages who are prajesha, prajapatis, the lords who create population, right? Staneta, in the middle, dharma maka manu amara vanishaha. In the middle, there's Vishnu. The devatas with controlling powers and the kings of the different planets who maintain the affairs of maintenance. And ante, at the end, to adharma hara manyu vasha suradhya. In the end, there is hara. Adharma, irreligion, Hara, Lord Shiva. Manyu Vasha, Asura Adyaha. The Asuras and so on who are Manyu Vasha, under the control of anger. The atheist is full of anger. But all of them, it says,
Maya vibhutaya ima pura shakti bhajaha. They are the powerful representatives, the vibhuta of the supremely powerful Lord. So he appears this way three times. In the beginning, Brahma and the Prajapatis. In the middle, Vishnu and the Rajarshis, the saintly kings. And in the end, Lord Shiva, the demons and the atheists and any religion. But all of them are the Lord working three different ways to create, maintain, and control creation. So this is maintenance time now. So what you see being enacted here is a kind of perpetual tension that we see whenever there's real spiritual life. Because one thing that the Dharma does is Dharma upholds the right order of things. Now the world itself has to be organized according to Ritta, to correct order. And that's what Dharma does. And so you have to have spiritual people who are engaged in this business. But the other thing that you have to do is, the other part of Dharma is transcend the whole business and get out of it. So in the Bhagavatam, you see these two aspects. Sometimes they're embodied in different people, and they conflict. And sometimes it comes to this issue is settled up pretty nicely. But for example, Daksha is not a bad guy. He's expert at sacrifice. He is, you know, the upholder of the whole karma kanda portion of the Vedas, right? And so Daksha is a representative of the real established order ordained by the Vedas. He's acting according to order, right? But then his daughter marries this hippie, Lord Shiva. And to Daksha, he can't understand really what is Lord Shiva's business. Because Lord Shiva embodies another thing, renunciation. Austerity, going away from the world, living under a tree, no fixed abode. Huh? And so this comes down to a real fight, because Daksha loses his temper and blasphemes Lord Shiva, and then his daughter immolates herself, you know. It just becomes warfare, you know. Between them, and you have sacrificial arenas where people are chopping each other to pieces. And again, Daksha many times he also runs into Narada Muni and curses Narada Muni, actually, because Narada Muni, Daksha's just doing his job. He's having lots of sons who are supposed to go on and be Prajapatis and everything like that, and Narada Muni keeps interfering with this and taking them off to renunciation. The Vedas teach two things. They teach you how to be attached and how to be detached. Both are authorized. And sometimes it sounds really contradictory to people. In Europe in the Middle Ages, there was one scholar who wrote a book called Sic et Non, which means in Latin yes and no. And he went through all the scriptures and all the authorities, and on different issues he found where here it said yes and here it said no. About the same thing. I think his purpose was a little to agitate and disturb people. I once realized that I could write a book with the same title. We'd have to use a Sanskrit title, Iti Neti Cha. And I could go through Prabhupada stuff, and I could say, you know, householder life is good, yes, and no. And on so many places you find where it's like that, you know. And then you see these conflicts among devotees on the different issues, where they each get a quotation and they have their snowball fight. You know, I have my quotes, and this guy, they throw quotes at each other. You know, I have it, and, you know, and nothing is settled. So you have to have a broader understanding to see why it speaks like this, because the real thing is that both of these roles are positive roles, both the role of maintaining the world order of in Krishna consciousness movement. We will be very good if we really have very pious householders, especially who know how to have superior children, and you know, that's great. I went through this because when I joined the movement, at that time householder life was good. You couldn't be any kind of a leader unless you were married. And everyone had to get married, and you know, before I moved into a temple, there was a whole thing where our temple president left to take sannyas, and there was only this brahmachari who was there going to be the temple president. Before he could be the temple president, he had to get married. And some 19-year-old bhakti, you know. Because I mean, you just had to be married. Because Prabhupada had become very enthusiastic when three householder couples, Malati was a part of that group, and Shamsundar, Malati and Shamsundar, and Mukunda, and his wife, and Guru Das, Jamuna. They all went to London. It's an interesting story, but within months, the Hare Krishna mantra was the number one song. So then Prabhupada took those devotees to Bombay, and he had a big Pandal program, brought them to Bombay, and there's a lecture there where he said that my spiritual master sent sannyasis to London, and they could not do anything. But I have sent householders, and they have come out successful. So my spiritual master made sannyasis, but I shall make grahastas. It's in folio. Because there's no obstacle to preaching if one is a grahasta. So that was the mood. Everybody had to be a grahasta, you know. And then Prabhupada became quite disappointed in what was happening in the Grahasa Ashram. Everybody was fighting, marriages were breaking up, and everything like that. And that was part of it anyway. And then it completely turned around. And then you had to be Brahmachari or a sannyas
You know, that was a holy household. Everybody had to go, household of life is a dark well. There's no possibility of spiritual advancement in household of life. On and on like that, you know. It was just completely the opposite. It was really funny because, and I actually heard this during the time when householders were good. They were just trying to convince this guy, you know, to get married. He wanted to stay a brahmachari. And he said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur stayed a brahmachari. And they said, do you think you can be a brahmachari like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur? And then later I heard this too. They're trying to convince somebody not to get married. He wants to be a householder. And he says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a householder. So we have been through these phases, you know. Like you just have to have some good judgment. The point is that people have to be situated so they make spiritual advancement. And you know, if householder life is good, as long as you're making spiritual advancement in householder life, it's fine. At a certain point, it's necessary to go further. Then it becomes bad. Because now if some attachments hold you up from doing what you need to do to make spiritual advancement. So the same thing, you know, there's good and there's better and then there's best. So, okay, you're good. Then you go from, so good becomes the enemy of the better and the better becomes the enemy of the best at certain times. So it depends. That's because the Vedas just deal with so many different levels of advancement. So it's done to encourage people. So here, however, there's a necessity with Priyavrata. He had just gone to the best, but now they needed him to what would look like a fall down. To usually if people leave this renunciation for material life, they may do it for sense gratification. So he is simply not interested. So therefore they come to convince him otherwise. And so now you see Brahma. It says that he sadaya. He was feeling compassion for Priyavrata. He could appreciate, and he had a certain kind of a smile on his face. And so Prabhupada tells us the meaning of this, the affectionate smile and glance, with his feelings of compassion. So you've decided not to accept householder life, so I'm coming to tell you you must accept it. But at the same time, he actually appreciated his austerity, his renunciation, his penance, his devotion. And he wanted to actually assure him that even though you accept householder life and a material position, you will not be deviated. You will not be deviated. Because normally, it may be that this is some kind of entanglement. But here he says, you will not be deviated. How is that possible? Prabhupada explains, by Kripa Siddhi. He will get, by the mercy of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is his grandfather. And, of course, also in the Parampara. So he says that these things become possible, as Prabhupada says, by the blessings of a Vaishnava, everything is possible. Everything is possible. And he mentions here this Kripa Siddhi. Sometimes there's Sadhana Siddhi. One attains perfection through the sadhana. And sometimes we see that somebody without having performed any sadhana, or very much sadhana, sometimes they make a great deal of advancement quickly. So one reason for that may be Kripa Siddhi, the mercy of attained by mercy, Prabhupada remarks, actually, that what one needs for advancement in life is the blessings of superior persons. This is people in Vedic society, they know this very well. He mentions, he's talking, here Prabhupada is talking about Krishna and Balaram. When they grew up, they had the blessings of a loving mother. And this was of great benefit to them, to have these blessings of a loving mother. So actually, when a child, you need the blessings, first of all, of your parents. Not only do they care for you, but they wish you well at all the time. And of course, today, I think many people are deprived of that important blessing. And then the blessings of teachers. Blessing means you wish somebody well, and you think, may this person succeed. And if people are actually superior people, that's potent. It has potency. We see this all the time, that in Vedic culture, that people who are advanced, they're well, there's blessings and then there's the opposite, which is a curse. And both of these are potent. Somebody like Durvasa Muni, simply because of his huge amount of austerity he performed, he could bless and he could curse. And it was potent. People were very frightened when he came around because he... One thing is that when you perform severe austerities and you're not a devotee, you tend to become short-tempered and irritable. So, people were really afraid of him. But people actually had blessings. It's important. See, today, you know, you also hear blessings and curses all the time. When you go up to the CVS and you buy something, and the girl behind the counter says, "Have a nice day," right? That's a blessing. May you have a nice day. But because she says it, doesn't mean you will. And then when you're driving out of the parking lot, suddenly, you almost hit a car. You're coming and don't see him coming. And you brake fast. And the guy yells out the window, "Go to hell!" That's a curse, right? But you don't go to hell because he says it. There's no potency. People are blessing and cursing all the time, but it doesn't do much. But here we see that actually blessings and also curses are potent. In this case, the devotees make advancement when they have blessing. But the interesting story about this in a devotional context is the story of Madhavendra Puri and his two disciples. In his old age, Madhavendra Puri became physically unable to take care of himself very well, and so Ishwara Puri attended upon him quite nicely and took care of him. And Madhavendra Puri was in this exhibiting for the very first time the symptoms of love and separation in the mood of Radharani. And all the time he was crying and lamenting for Krishna with strong feelings of separation. And this other disciple came along. What's his name? Ramachandra Puri. Ramachandra Puri. Who had become influenced by Mayavad philosophy and had offended Madhavendra Puri. Had said... when he saw how he was lamenting in separation for Krishna, he says, "Why are you doing like this? Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana. So you shouldn't have the anger. Instead, you should be, you know, situated in Brahman and try to give him instructions or criticisms like that. And Madhavendra Puri says, here I am in my last days and I cannot attain Krishna, and this fool has come to lecture me about Brahman. So Ishwara Puri received the blessings of Madhavendra Puri. He wished him well because he took care of him so nicely and so faithful, and for that he got to be the real spiritual master of Mahaprabhu. And Ramachandra Puri got to be a pest. He also tried to act like the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he simply caused trouble to all the devotees and was unable to receive any mercy from Mahaprabhu either, because he did not receive the blessings of Madhavendra Puri. So that has potency. So Brahma has potency. In a Vaishnava context, I can understand where this comes from. When we talk about a superior person, we mean a devotee who's done a great deal of service, pleased their spiritual master, and therefore pleased Krishna. Somebody has done something Krishna is pleased with him. And I think that's how this Prabhupada mentioned once, actually, about his own disciples, your Kripa City. Where's our punya karma, you know? I'm your punya karma. It says you cannot perform Krishna consciousness with determination unless there's this history of past pious activities. Where is it? So Prabhupada supplied that missing thing with his blessings. So somebody like Prabhupada, the reason Prabhupada has this potency, we're just missing this verse where it's mentioned that the demons are Manu Vasya. Krishna is called Prema Vasya, means that he's controlled by the love of his devotees. It's one of his characteristics listed in the Nectar of Devotion, Prema Vasya. He's controlled by the love of his devotees. And so when somebody has done something, sacrificed to please Krishna, Krishna's feeling is that he feels obligated. This is natural, actually. It doesn't happen anymore, but generally, if there's actual civilization, somebody does something for you, you naturally feel, oh, I should do something back. Right? I mean, Prabhupada was talking about how Brahmins, they taught the children and didn't ask for anything. No fee, no tuition. But the people said, oh, this Brahmin is, because a Brahmin's not supposed to do that. He's supposed to accept what comes, so he doesn't charge a fee. And then Prabhupada said that then the parents would say, oh, this Brahmin is teaching our children so nicely. Here's some rice, here's some cloth. He never had any want of anything. In fact, he had surplus he had to give away because it didn't save for the future either in those days. Didn't worry about a pension plan or anything like that. So it was like that. He would just do his thing and people would receive a service, they'd give something back. But nowadays, if you do something like that, hey, it's free! You don't have to give anything. So if our Gurukul hadn't charged tuition, even when they charged, people didn't pay. So it's a different age. But normally it's like that. When you do something for somebody, the natural thing is I have to reciprocate with them. And this is true about Krishna. So when devotees render devotional service and they don't ask anything in exchange, they just do it out of love, Krishna feels very devoted to them. Etamam prapajite tamasamya bhajamyaham, you know. This is he's like this. So then, but a devotee, Krishna will do anything but for them, but Krishna, they don't ask.
Except somebody like Prabhupada, he's very compassionate. He comes to America, he sees all these completely useless people with so much bad karma and everything. But he says to Krishna, I would like them to make spiritual advancement. And Krishna would naturally reply, well, you know, they're not at all fit. And Prabhupada would have to say, well, you know, I know they're not fit, but I want them to be. Anyway, this is what you want. That's how I can understand in devotional context how the power to give blessings actually works. And so Prabhupada explained the role of the spiritual master like that. He said, if you want to please a rich man, what can you do? You know, to buy him a jet airplane or something, a private jet for you, and break your bank, the guy who has everything. But if he's got a little son and you give him a 10-cent lollipop, because he's pleased, this is the principle. So anyway, the blessings are very... even if we're doing sadhana, blessings we should get them like this. So here he is being blessed this way, that he will be able to go into household of life, and still he will attain his goal. He will not be ultimately affected by anything there. Mahaprabhu also gave instructions when this Brahmana Kurma wanted to go with Mahaprabhu, leave his family and everything, and travel with him. And he said, no, you stay here. You stay in your own country, and under my order, you make your people Krishna conscious. And if you do like this, then actually you'll always have my association. So he told him to stay there and do like that, and also gave him blessings. You simply do like that, I'll be pleased, and you'll have my association. So these are examples like this. He praised Lord Brahma. It says here, Prabhupada said this important word, sukta vaka. Vaka means speech by means of... by what? Sukta means the Vedic hymns. He also promises etiquette. It means it's just what you... There's a proper way to greet somebody like Brahma is with words of praise, appropriate Vedic hymns in praise of Brahma. Because there are praise suktas like that in the Vedas about Lord Brahma, so these are recited. Any comments, questions? Interesting encounter. Yes. Have? It depends on the devotee and what the discrepancies are, I suppose. It's not the same formula fits all like that. What is the difficulty, and how do you remedy it? You have to see. Here we are. We have Krishna. Prabhupada has laid out the path of devotional service for us. We know exactly what we need to do. We should know exactly what we need to do. Sometimes people don't know. Sometimes they're not educated properly in Krishna consciousness, or they've received some misinformation. I've been to some place, you know, where people want to know something about Krishna consciousness. They just go on the web and type in a word, and they get websites up, and they don't know who they're from. You know? So that people don't, sometimes they don't know how to hear in the proper way from the right authorities. So many books are there, so many things. It used to be in the beginning of the Krishna Conscious Movement, Prabhupada was the only one. So now many other people have chimed in. So you have to see that people actually know what the process of Krishna consciousness is. So sometimes that clears things up. But then if they know what they're supposed to do but still are not doing it, then we have to see what the obstacle is and try to help people overcome that obstacle so they can make spiritual advancement. Because there are obstacles in devotional service. One is just philosophical confusion. You don't know who God is. You don't know what the relationship between God and the world is. You don't know who you are. You're confused about what is the actual process of devotional service. Then there's various kinds of material attachments. That's another obstacle that has to be overcome. Attached to material enjoyment, attached to gaining mystical powers, attached to liberation even. There's different kinds of material attachments. Then there are offenses. Offenses against the Vaishnavas, offenses against spiritual master, offenses against deities, deity worship, offenses against the holy Dham, and of course, offenses against the holy name. Those have to be cleared up. And then even after all that, you can also have some other more subtle kind of material desires. I'm a very renounced person now. I have no... given up everything. I'm the renounced order of life. But I go into the temple room, and there's the place in the temple room where I usually sit, and somebody else is sitting there. I flip out. And so on. There's these little... This is called tushta sakti, being addicted to becoming addicted to little trifling things. I need my hot medicinal tea every morning at this time, and so on. One can become attached to fame. You become a devotee, and then people glorify you. Maybe you become famous, and you're thinking, oh, my name will be in the parampara. When I leave this world, there'll be a big samadhi, and everybody will come. These kind of things. All those kinds of things have to be overcome. Discrepancies. So we have to look for them. Often we have these various kinds of things. We're not aware of them, but we have to show Krishna our seriousness by trying actively to become free from them. And if it is very difficult, we have to struggle sincerely and ask for Krishna's help, and he will help us. That's the answer. Okay. What to do? But it's like you're saying, what do you do when somebody's sick? Well, you have to go to somebody who's like a doctor who knows what he's doing and find out what are the particulars. Anything else? Thank you. Srila Prabhupada, he's